The rose bush is never looking over at the sunflower going, I'm not tall enough. I don't have those yellow little things. Ugh, what a loser. I'm the worst rose bush ever. The rose bush is just being like, fuck yeah, I'm a rose. Let's go. I got some cool thorns. I'm pink. Ha ha. Cool. High five. There's no comparison with nature. Nature is just is. And so this is what it is. I'm Val. I'm sparkly. I'm a little bit weird. I like that.
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on the cultural and personal transformations. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, like this video or podcast, leave a comment, or send a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is a dear friend of mine, whose story and initiatives are so profound and inspiring. Mm-hmm. We have DJ Valerie Belove join us, a ray of beautiful, cheery, and positive energy in Bitcoin, a stylish and talented DJ, and the mastermind behind initiative and podcast of Bitcoin for Peace. Valerie, welcome.
Yay. Thanks so much, Viv. Oh my God, I love you. Thank you so much for inviting me to talk with you. You're so special.
We officially met in Madeira during Bitcoin Atlantis, but I came across your story and your work last year in a women's brunch during Bitcoin Conference Miami. Yeah, it was last year. Yeah. It was right before I started releasing this podcast. And mm-hmm. I remember sitting among the audience listening to your speech at the brunch. And I knew at the time that you are someone that I want to bring on the show, even before the show existed. So I let the universe do the rest. And now here we are.
Wow, that's amazing. Wasn't that an amazing event? Like, I love what Natalie always puts together in Cali, and obviously that's going to be happening in Nashville. So what a blessing to bring all the women together.
I love how you are very vocal about who you are, and the authenticity really, really shines through. And it's just honest and authentic. And even with the things that you might not be proud of, and this is something incredibly rare and beautiful to come across. And I really appreciate this opportunity to learn about your journey and the learnings and the wisdom that you've acquired along the way. So let's dive in.
All right. Shoot.
But would you give us a little bit of a context of what was your life like? How was your upbringing like and your life like leading to the point when you discovered Bitcoin?
I've always been interested in personal growth, and I've always been interested in helping other people, you know, reach inside and be the best versions of themselves and highlight, you know, who they are and why they're here. That's why I became a DJ, you know, like 25 years ago, no more than that, a long time ago.
When you were 10 years old?
Yeah, sure. exactly. Thanks, Viv. I love you. But, you know, I've always loved, like, I used to be a charter boat captain, and I lived on a sailboat for, 3 years after college. I worked at Deloitte and Touche. I did the corporate world, and I just was like, ugh, this is killing my soul. But one of the coolest things that I got the opportunity to do was living on this sailboat and the Great Lakes and in Key West, and college kids would come live aboard the boat with us. And we would talk about what their dreams are, you know, and I loved asking them, and they would just be like, well, my dad was a doctor, my mom was a doctor, grandpa, da, 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 I'm going to be a doctor. And I was like, I didn't ask you what your family wants you to be. I asked you what your dream is. And they would just look at me like, no one's ever asked me that before, you know? And so it was just these little aha light bulb moments that I realized, wow, we've got a gap here. You know, there's so many young people out there that didn't really have the opportunity to think about their dreams. And so I just thought that was a really interesting way to engage with people on the water and being on the boat and, you know, just new perspectives. And when you're in new environments, your brain works differently and you think differently. And you have this like, wow, the world is filled with things I didn't even know were possible, you know? And so that was something that really lit me up, is working with these students. And, you know, I ended up going to San Diego and, you know, working on boats there. And, you know, I wasn't making ends meet. And so I really loved, you know, personal growth and massage and energy and holistic healing. So I started studying all of that. And so I was like, okay, how can I fuse these two things together? still wasn't making ends meet as that. So I went back to corporate, ended up working as kind of a pseudo CFO position at a staff leasing company for several years, and was absolutely miserable. Just, you know, my spirit was drying up, you know, and I felt like I was cheating on myself because I was doing the thing that I was talking to the students about not doing, you know, and I couldn't find my mission. I couldn't find my dream. And I felt really like, I just felt like a big failure, you know, and I thought, oh, I'll go back to school. I'll get my master's. I'll go teach young people in school and teach them about personal growth and finding their dreams, et cetera. And I'm like, there's no degree for that, you know, and Tony Robbins was just coming up in the 90s when this was happening. And so it was just, you know, just wasn't fitting, wasn't clicking, you know, it was in my, you know, mid to late 20s. And I went to a club with my girlfriends in Las Vegas. And, you know, previous to that, I had, you know, gone to a couple clubs with them dancing. And I'm like, this music's kind of boring. There's no words. I don't like it, you know, bleh. And so they took me to this club in Vegas called Club Utopia, and they gave me some ecstasy. And I had never taken ecstasy before, even though I'm a deadhead, I've done acid and mushrooms and all that fun stuff, but I never tried this magical substance. And, so I get there and I'm still in this like headspace of just feeling like lost, like failure. I'm not living up to my potential. And there's these two folks on stage called Dub Tribe, and they're, you know, singing, and it's a girl and a guy, and there's words and drums and DJs. I'm like, oh, right. This is more my style of this electronic stuff. And she was singing this song, and she was singing, "You are beautiful. You are perfect just the way you are. You are beautiful. You are perfect just the way you are." And of course, I'm not going to sing it because her voice is 10,000 times better, but she kept singing it. And then my mind was saying, no, you're not. You're messed up. You're, you know, you're a giant shit show, you know? And I was just like, and so just, but it was this back and forth with her voice and the energy and then the intensity of this medicine that was within me. And it just kept breaking down that negativity and that lost feeling. And she just beat it out of me, this negativity and this fear and this, you know, wall. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she did this with words and music and sound and vibration. Huh? What is this stuff? You know? And so I recognized, like, I started thinking about Bob Marley, you know, Get Up, Stand Up, and John Lennon, Imagine. And I was thinking about, wow, look at all the heart and the spiritual transformation that this music created on millions and billions of people and culture throughout space and time. And I was just like, huh. So I grabbed my girlfriend in front of me. I told her, I was like, I found my special purpose, you know? And I was like, I'm going to be a DJ. I'm going to use music. And that's how I'm going to help people reach into their truth and into their heart. I was like, I'm going to go all over the world and I'm going to help people raise their vibrations and, you know, realize their dreams. And she was like, yes, you are, Val. Good job. You know? And so I started doing all this. And I would go out and DJ and ask people tips and tricks and, you know, just keep layering on like how to get better, how to improve myself. And people were like, yeah, do one thing that people are going to remember at every set, you know, have one special thing. And so I thought, well, let's add some fire dancers and stilt walkers and performers and make it visual and do video. And so I just kept layering on and layering on some creative aspects. And, you know, whatever the budget was that we got, it would like be blown on costumes and all the fun, you know, just make it spectacle. And, you know, and my husband, well, he became my husband, but he booked me to DJ at a party because he ran into one of my girlfriends who was a dancer wearing one of our crazy costumes after we had played a show at that Club Utopia place. So full circle, that same night, she meets him and they're all doing some other thing. And I went back to the hotel room to go to sleep. And then he ended up booking us to come DJ at his housewarming party. And so we ended up falling madly in love. And, you know, 5 days after we met, he proposed to me.
Wow.
And, you know, the stories, you know, we ended up getting married, having the kids, all that great stuff. And I, you know, I put my headphones on the shelf to be a stay-at-home mom. And I put my career on the side because I was like, well, I don't want to be like, I love my mom, but she had to work, you know, a lot and wasn't home. And I was just like, I don't want to be like that if I'm having kids. I want to be home. I want to be present. I want to be with my children. And so I did that. But again, like over time, I started losing that sense of me. And I was too much into, I love my family, but I really didn't take enough time to take care of myself. And I really started falling downhill. I started drinking a whole bunch and, you know, kind of had this just giant falling apartness, you know, and then there was just some negativity that went on in the relationship that I couldn't recover from, you know, and I felt really, just alone and disempowered. And I thought, oh my God, if anybody knew what the hell was going on inside of me, I would die, you know? And so I was really filled with shame and I felt very, I just didn't want to tell anybody how bad things were. So I suffered in silence for quite a while and I started drinking and drinking and drinking. And I got to the point where, you know, there were some episodes with my husband at the time and it was just like, I'm out. You know, I felt completely trapped financially because I gave up my career and I felt completely trapped. You know, we had moved from Hawaii back here to Colorado. I didn't really know anybody. And so I just felt very isolated and filled with shame, you know, and I just felt like, I think the world is going to be much better off without me. I think my kids will be better off without me. I'm a mess. And it turns out, I was wrong, but I tried to leave the planet. I tried to get out of here. And thank God I was a failure again. And, you know, after all of this went on, it was still just this shame-filled, you know, experience. And just like I had mentioned, you know, at the women's event, you know, I ended up going to rehab and I joked, of course, like, you know, every DJ needs to go to rehab at least once, you know? So there's a happy ending to the story because I really got to take time to reacquaint myself with who I am, why I'm here, you know, and realizing like, wow, this is, I messed up. This is not the right relationship for me. Of course, we ended up getting divorced 8 years ago. And so just getting into my truth and really finding my spiritual path again. And so that was really very profound. And as ugly as the dark side is, sometimes you have to go burn in those ashes, you know, like the phoenix, so you can rise again as a new version of yourself. And so I was blessed with that gift. And, you know, and I made a promise to God when I was, after the attempt of suicide, and I said, I promise you, don't let me die. Like, please don't let me die. Like, I'm going to do my best to give back and not forget my mission. And I said, you know, whatever you want me to do, just keep guiding me and I'll listen to you. And if I have to tell my story so that other people can hear it and maybe not feel alone, then I'll tell my story and I'm going to be brave. And I know that, like, when I started hearing other people's stories, it made me realize like, oh my gosh, like it doesn't matter if you're a billionaire, if you're a nurse, if you're a student, if you're a mom, if you're a doctor, if you're a hairdresser. I met all of these people in rehab and I met all of these people afterwards when I did a 12-step program, which was great, but also a lot of weird, not good. And I was like, wow, there's so many of us out there suffering in silence. And there's so many of us, we don't even have a clue. Whatever looks on the outside, nobody knows what's going on the inside for each other. And we can never make assumptions that someone's got it all together, you know? And it really was the most humbling experience of my life. And I feel like it's taught me a lot more about compassion and empathy. And it's taught me a lot more about resilience and power and how strong the human spirit is and how strong we are together. And when we share our vulnerabilities, it's actually a sign of strength, you know? And for me, I felt, you know, I didn't want anybody to know what I was going through. Cause I thought, well, I was the PTO president and I'm the super mom and I'm DJ Val and all this stuff. And I felt like, oh my God, then nobody's going to want to be my friend anymore. Nobody's going to love me. And boy, was I wrong. And I, again, it's good to be wrong when it's like that. And so, yeah. And so I've really been on this wonderful journey for the last 8 years. And I started working on this project of like, wow, how can I analyze what the heck just happened? So I don't do that again. How do I make sure I don't self-abandon and, you know, not, you know, follow my truth? So I started looking into, of course, more personal growth, et cetera. And I was like, I'm just going to make up my own model and my own framework, you know, that makes sense to me that I've kind of pulled pieces of information like a buffet and reassembled it into something that works for my little, my brain. And so as I was doing that, I created this 11X love code that I'm working on as kind of a personal growth project and also a book. And so it's just this long drawn out thing. And so during COVID, you know, all of us are sitting around watching YouTube and everything. And I'm just like, I guess I should probably get the money section of this code down because I don't feel really confident in my money abilities. So I started looking at crypto. It seems sort of like video game points or something. And so just that consciousness didn't make any sense to me. And I didn't know that Bitcoin was different. And so I just lumped it all together and forgot about it, you know? And then that Beeple sale happened. And then I started learning about the 40%, you know, money print that happened during COVID. And it was just like, okay, I guess maybe I should get involved in this. So I started researching again. And then it wasn't until I heard Alex Gladstein a couple months later, after I had started that research again, talking about, you know, what are the human rights use cases for Bitcoin? How can people escape authoritarian regimes? And there was a story about a woman escaping, I don't know if it was Iran or Afghanistan, but she had her seed phrase sewn into her clothing. And she was able to start a new life as a refugee because she had Bitcoin. And she got robbed on the way and all this stuff. And I was just like, okay, fuck all this crypto stuff. What's Bitcoin? How can this be a tool to help people become free? And how can it be a tool for peace? How can it be a tool to make the world a safer, better, more fair place? And so I've been on that journey since, you know, I think 21, so like 3.5 years. And I haven't stopped. And I just keep going deeper, deeper, deeper down the rabbit hole. And I'm just like, oh my God, there's a consciousness around Bitcoin. There's this way that it brings us together. It changes who we are and how we operate, you know, and how we think about time, you know, and it's just been the, other than giving birth to my children and going to Burning Man for the first time, Bitcoin has been the most transformational, like, gift in my life. And just being able to keep understanding, like, this is the thing that the Woodstock generation was missing. They had all the kumbaya and the love and the meditation and even the DJ world, right? If you're not building the future with a foundation of sound money, all of these beautiful visions are going to crumble. They're going to keep crumbling because they're built on soil that's filled with corruption, which is fiat and the fiat consciousness. And so I thought, wow, okay, sign me up. What do? I'm starting a podcast. I don't know what the heck to do. Thank God Camilla Campton from Swan. She was like, just do it, Val. And I'm just like, I don't know anything. She's like, that's the point. You ask people who do and you give them the questions. And I was like, okay. So shout out to Camilla. God bless her. And so I've just been on this journey, you know, and so I'm trying to think, how can we fuse, you know, the technology of spirituality and the technology of Bitcoin, and obviously just all of the tech that brings us together and unifies us. And how can we assemble that in such a way that we can design and build this new future, like Bucky Fuller says, right? And so many of us bang our heads against the wall and shout at the system. It's like, just build a new one. Just focus the attention on the new one. Don't worry. Let the old one suffocate, you know? And so it's just and just so many like-hearted and like-minded people like you, beautiful Vivian, that I get to meet along this journey who are on this mission. And it's just like, oh my God, Bitcoiners are the most generous, intelligent, like badass people I've ever met, ever. And I'm just like, I get to be a Bitcoiner too. Yay. How can I serve?
That makes me cool and badass and all these great things, right?
It does. And it's just like, it's just so cool. I don't know. I feel like Bitcoin is hope. It truly is hope, you know? And it's not just hope of a philosophy. It's hope in action, you know? It's hope with tangible, you know, functionality, you know? It's not just like, if we all just, you know, meditate on 11-11, everything's going to be good, which I do believe it will. And, you know, but we need these other things too. So I don't know. That's my jam. And so I'm here, and that's how I'm doing Bitcoin for Peace and meeting you.
I really, really do wish that I have the same amount of same level of energy and positivity when I get to your age. I'm obviously a bit younger, but, Not much.
You're a lot younger than me, dude. You're like decades younger.
For our audience, maybe familiar with your work around Bitcoin for Peace, but there's so much other work you're doing on the side that I get to witness. And I'm really, really grateful for your work in the space and unite and what you're doing to unite the creators in the space, to unite the podcasters and all of the cultural driven people in the space together to be stronger together. And then the Virtual Creator Summit we had in May was an absolute blast. Everybody loved it.
Heck yeah. It's a group effort. It's not just me. I mean, I couldn't have done this without each of you guys showing up with your genius. I just set the table basically. And so you did all the hard lifting.
It was a big table to set. So
but it's just so cool, right? Because everybody's interested in sharing and coming together and collaborating and you don't see that in other industries as much. I don't feel elbows out in Bitcoin. You know, I feel like, yes, we're competitive to some degree. Yes, we want to keep pushing ourselves to the highest level that we can achieve. But we really do have this game theory of, you know, you win, I win, we win, the mission wins. It's not about, you know, this zero-sum game kind of thing. And it feels, it's just a different ethos, you know, and I'm really, really I'm just struck by it and impressed by it. And I'm like, wow.
Because we are Bitcoiners and we value proof of work and we value consistency, all these great stuff, we understand our value. We understand ourselves. So we have agency and we have sovereignty to become ourselves before we are a content creator. So when we are ourselves as a content creator, there's nobody else can be better at you than you. And there's nobody, and if you are on the path of trying to become someone else, you're doomed to fail. And this is a very fiat mentality we see of everybody trying to compete for the same audience. But in Bitcoin, it's not. The collective of us become Bitcoin content.
It's incredible. And I think about you and what you're doing and getting, you know, the transformational stories that people share, and culture is so important because, you know, it's one thing for, you know, all we've got so many minds out there and so many learning styles, right? And so for me, I came, you know, my aha was because I heard about this, you know, the freedom technology that Bitcoin is and how it can create a better life for people. It's not just number go up. Number go up is great. I like that. Heck yeah, bring it on. But it's we all get lit up by certain things. And so to think that there's one way to share the mission and the story and the purpose of Bitcoin would be missing the point. And I think that's what's really neat. And you just touched on that. It's like we all are like in these lanes of our genius, of our brilliance, of our shining lights, you know? And
I wanted to bring this into part of the topic of today's show. It's the womanhood and femininity. In not only in Bitcoin, but just in general. Right now, we are in a weird society where people are kind of confused who they are in this world. People are kind of confused at times who they are and what we're supposed to be doing here. Like, nobody have any clue. And you shared that you jumped into marriage really quickly because you met your ex-husband very short, after a very short period of time, you got married. What were you thinking? Like, excuse my language. I think you can handle
it. No, it's perfect.
Right?
It's,
yeah. Because
what the hell are you thinking? Right?
I'm a woman myself, right? And I think about like in what situation would I be open to marry someone and make that commitment? And I don't know. Like, I sometimes people say, if you know, you know. So I'm trying to kind of rationalize this and tap into other people's stories of how do you kind of take that leap of faith? What happened? Like, what was on your mind when you made that perhaps the most important decision of your life?
It was definitely. I would not be a mom. I wouldn't have my kids. One decision changes everything, right? And so every moment is an opportunity for a new door, a new decision. And so in my 30s, and certainly when I was DJing, of course, I'm traveling all over. I'm, you know, living a great life, la, la, la. I'm free. I'm having, you know, lots of fun with lots of people. And I almost got fixed in my 20s because I was just like, I am not the mom type. I am not the marrying type. Like, just nope, not me. And I just figured, like, I'm pretty messed up. I don't need to go mess anybody else up. And my parents have 8 marriages between the two of them. And I really was just like, ooh, marriage is not something that actually is a legitimate union thing. I'm just going to go be, you know, free and have my relationships and all that. And, you know, when I met this man, it was something just super special. You know, it was like we had this crazy connection. And the 5th night, you know, we were at a music festival and, you know, and he grabbed me and he's just like, you're going to be my wife. And I just like, what the fuck are you talking about? But then it was also like, oh my God, I just felt my whole being was just like, this is happening.
Did you have this a hunch? Happening.
It was just like this full body. Yes. You know, like my mind said, oh, but the body and everything was just like, you're going to marry this man and have a family with him.
And that wasn't scary.
Yeah. Like once my mind started doing all of its mental gymnastics, heck yeah. It was like, what are you thinking? And we were both just like, oh, what? It was just one of those perfect timing things. Cause I literally was looking at properties up in the mountains outside of San Diego. And I wanted to get in the trees and the forest and I just needed a break from the city. And it was just this, even that first morning that the girls and I were there, I had a couple of my friends there that were performers and we were sitting out on the deck and we were just smelling the nature and the water and the air and the creek and everything. And we were meditating and doing this little, you know, just morning practice kind of thing. And I just sat there and this was before he had asked me to marry him. And I was just like, I'm manifesting this smell. Like I want to smell this every day. You know, I want to feel this nature, this vibrant aliveness. And then, you know, a couple days later, that's when this happened. And so it was just sort of like, okay, let's give it a shot, you know? And we had our ups and downs, you know, trying to get it together and organizing the wedding and eloping and all this stuff. But it was just one of those, like, we're not giving up on each other. And he was super romantic and just super sweet. And I was just like, wow, I've always wanted a man like this, you know, who was really thoughtful and knew what he wanted and wasn't afraid to like make it happen, you know? And so I really admired that about him and his masculine energy doing that, you know? And I was just like, wow, I get to be and I was independent for years, you know, all on my own, thinking I have to do everything all by myself. And so his masculine energy and my feminine energy, it allowed me to relax, you know, and feel safe and feel like, okay, I can be this nurturing, loving woman and he can be this strong, caring man and this provider. And so it was just like, all right, we're doing it. And obviously just our friendship and our care and our attraction, everything was there too. So, it was just great. Like we had this wonderful life and a wonderful relationship and it just, I was the one who started falling apart at the end, you know, of everything. And I was the one that, you know, cause he stayed the same the whole time. He had his same job. He had his same career. He had his same everything. Meanwhile, I gave my career up. My body changed. My hormones changed. My daily routine changed. The people that I'm interacting with are throwing up and shitting on me. my children. So it's like he got to do him and I had this major transformation. And so I didn't know what to do with myself, you know, because I felt like I would be a bad mom if I started working again. But then I also felt like I need something else. And I didn't honor that. And I didn't listen. And so to me, what I would offer to young women and any women who are seeking family, seeking marriage, seeking anything, like make sure 2 things. You take care of your soul. Don't give up your passion. Don't give up those dreams. Like I put my headphones on the shelf. I would DJ once in a while. We would have some parties and stuff, but I didn't really allow that part of myself to keep evolving and blossoming as much because I was tired. It's hard being a mom, like a full-time mom. People think like, oh, you're eating bonbons. No, you're not. You're working your ass off with these kids. So I would say, hold on to you. Make sure that you have time for you, that you dedicate and protect you in anything that you do, your business, your marriage, your any relationships as a mom, and make sure your ass is covered financially. Don't rely on someone else 100% ever. I just think it's suicide. And it obviously led me to that position of feeling like I was so trapped and hopeless and financially dependent on this person who was very, very generous and took care of everything. He was a great, great man. But I felt like, oh my God, all this other stuff's happening. I can't leave because I don't have the ability to sustain myself right now. And so it caused me to stay in a marriage that was not healthy for me any longer, you know, and if I would have had that financial sovereignty or at least some of it, I may have made some choices earlier to, you know, let go. And I didn't. And then because I didn't have that freedom and flexibility, I felt stuck and trapped. And, you know, when animals get caged and trapped, they don't behave in the way that they would if they're in their freedom, in their natural environment.
I'm very much the same. Like in any situations, either it's personal or in a career setting, the moment I feel I'm trapped is the moment I become unhappy and bitter.
Yeah, it's true, right? You feel just this like, and you get resentment and you get this thing and you know you want to shift gears, but there's maybe some constraints that are in your, you know, your field. And it's very, it's challenging. And so obviously there's times we need to be mature and compromise and do all of those things. But there's other times where it's like, no, I'm past my limit. Like this isn't working and I need to change. And if we don't give ourselves the ability to do so with our financial sovereignty, we could end up causing massive mental health issues, massive inner peace conflict that doesn't allow us to be this great version of ourselves.
But please don't take the blame all to yourself, because it's the gender role we're talking about. Because as a man, you don't bear the burden of, you know, like carrying the child. And in our society, like, or we're throughout the human history, the women, the mom is usually the caregiver of the family with their nurturing and kindness, energy. And this is just a thing that we, and this is instinct, right? Like when we become moms, the instincts start to kick in, and then the hormones, the bodies and the psychology change rapidly, and we don't get to stay steady. And there's so much expectations on both genders actually today. And especially for women, because we still want that financial stability for ourselves. And this is what I, like, this is my personal limitation too, is because now, like, I'm single, and there's the when I look ahead, there's the potential to have a family, to have children. And I ask myself, and my fear here is that I'm this freedom maximalist who finally love myself enough and don't need to find love to feel loved. And it's a great place to be. And what if one day I'm a mom and I'm a wife, and would my identity, the me who I am, getting consumed by my other roles in this world, be a daughter, be a wife, be a mom? Are there any going to be any space left for me? And we work, like, we love to work, not only because we work in Bitcoin. Well, that's a major reason too, but we work not only because we want that financial sovereignty. It's also because it gives us a sense of purpose. And we see this, and obviously right now we're getting into dicey territories here for many people, for both men and women and Bitcoiners, like, feel very strong about. And it's such an important, but it's such an important thing to discuss. And I think this is something I try to wrap my head around too. And I have friends that sit on different end of this scale, and this is something I personally struggle with as a single professional in Bitcoin, is that I cannot make my mind up completely where to be. And we see this trend of trap wife on Bitcoin Twitter. We see Bitcoiners making memes of having young and hot girlfriends after Bitcoin at a million a pop. And there's also this, and at the same time, there's also this strong craving of going off the grid with your trap wife and have six children, and she will never have to work ever again. And man be the provider and mom be the nurturer, and it's all good and well. And I personally question that a little for the reason you said, like, if as a person, before we're a mom, we're a wife, we are a woman or a man, we are a person. And the independence we all need to struck doesn't go away. But I get pushback on this. Is being a mom not enough? Is caring for the love of your life, caring for the people you love the most in this entire world and watch them grow and into their own person and launch into the world, isn't that enough? So I feel a little bit angry, even like a little bit sad, a little bit angry when I got asked this question. And I never able to fully articulate my feelings or get it across. So I'm going to ask you this. Is being a mom not enough?
With many questions, I would say it depends. And so it depends on the person. It depends on the situation. It depends on, you know, there are some people out there who are just like, their whole dream is in life is to be a mom, you know, and they can't wait to go play with crayons and do the thing and be the PTO, all the stuff. There's just like, that's their big dream, you know. And there's other women who are, you know, I want to start a business, or I want to build a building, or I want to fly a plane, whatever it might be. There's no right answer for any one of us. Like, it's totally individual, you know, and it's certainly circumstantial, you know, because there's certain situations where it's like, yeah, you have that freedom and flexibility that you can choose to be a stay-at-home mom, you know, and there's other times where it's like, you don't have that choice, you know? And so, I think it's so important that we never, ever quit trying to understand ourselves, you know, and because, like you said, even with hormone changes, you know, and as we grow into different versions of ourselves as women, the hormones really impact us and how we operate, you know, and sometimes it's just like, I don't want to do anything besides just sleep and be home and be in, you know, in my nest, right? I don't want to be out in the world. I don't want to be doing this stuff. I'm feeling like I need to be here. And there might be other times and rhythms of our life, or even just rhythms of the month, that it's like, yeah, let's go get out there on stage and let's go be this, you know? And so I think, unfortunately, the work schedule of 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, is geared around men. It's not geared around the moon. Previous to, you know, about 70, 60 years ago, women weren't really in the workplace the same way that they are now. And so, of course, it's going to make sense to just have it, that consistency, that masculine energy. Now that women are in the workplace, it's like, is there flexibility that, you know, we get to attune to our own natural rhythms, our own natural cycles? We're in a pendulum state, I think, with the trad fi or trad wife thing, you know, because we went from that and then we went to women's lib and burn the bras and we're going to go do this. And now it's like, oh, that was too hard. And now we're in this hardcore masculine world. So now we're going to go here. So it's always about what's the dance of harmony for all of us, you know, and, keeping that precious sacred sliver of our individual, you know, selves. Yes, you're going to wear the hat of mother. Yes, you're going to wear the hat of entrepreneur and of creative and artist and wife and, you know, community activist, whatever. But like, if you can't hold on to this little anchor that is you, you know, you're going to constantly get pulled in everyone else's directions, and you will lose yourself, which is what happened to me.
Right.
And it wasn't pretty. So
I think this is an important conversation to be had, not only for women, but also for men out there who are looking for their perfect fit, but maybe they're having disagreements on this very issue. And when women, and I want to ask you this, when women, and in this case, when you say that you want a career after starting a family, what does it mean? Like, what is the thing that you're actually looking for? Because I've heard arguments from where men would argue that, oh, the money is no issue. Like, I provide and I make enough for both of us comfortably. Why you'd bring this onto yourself working, you know? So what's your response to that?
It depends. Again, is it a self-expression thing? Am I an artist? Am I trying to create something that is giving value to the world through a creative lens? Am I a builder? You know, do I like to build things? Am I just somebody who wants to get the heck out of the house so that I don't have to deal with everybody? You know, so there's all these reasons why people might want to have a career. Is it a full-time career? Is it a side hustle? Is it a part-time thing? Are you doing volunteer work? That's a lot of things that you see with couples and with families, you know. It's like, well, just go do a volunteer project, you know, go do this thing. And that's great. And that's what I did. You know, I did tons of that. And there's something, especially if you started out with a career, you know, and if you didn't get married when you were 18, right out of high school, and you'd had some taste of earning money and creating value and having some sovereignty, it's a big shift. I remember when I was first with my husband and I was transitioning out of my DJ career because I knew we were going to, you know, get pregnant at some point. And I had to kind of transition into, because, you know, he earned more money than I did. And he was just like, I make more money. Don't worry. You don't have to work. And I'm like, but I like it. You know, I love being on stage. I love giving music to people. I love the vibe. I love this thing. It's not the lifestyle for a mom, really. Like, you know, you're out in the middle of the night, you're traveling, it's not healthy, all that. And so, but there was still something that filled me up as a woman and as Val, you know? And so, I think it's like, what is our purpose here in life? Is your purpose just peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? Great. If your purpose is peanut butter and jelly plus some creativity or plus some, you know, entrepreneurship, great. But I think there's something to be said about earning our own way to some degree. We may not earn as much as our partner. That's fine if that's our arrangement.
That's not the point.
But there's, yeah, it's there's just something good. It just feels like money is energy, you know, and it's kind of like you're expressing your value and your worth and you're getting some feedback in, you know, with math. And so I don't know. I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. And I think we have to be open to pivot too, you know, because there's not this like, oh, I'm going to be this person for the next 60 years. I'm going to be this mom for the next 15, 20 years. You know, you don't know what your kids are going to be like. You don't know what your relationship's going to be like. You know, you don't know what's going to happen when you start hitting menopause and all that shit starts changing. It's real. You just don't know. So I think being open-minded and flexible, but constantly tuning in, like, is this right? Is this feel good? Is this like, you know, like you would a dashboard on your car, you know, like, where are we going? What is a check engine light on? You know, is it like is something smoking? It's like, we have to be conscientious of that in our own lives, I think. And so, or conscious, I don't know. Conscious is probably the better word.
Knowing what you know as a woman and as a Bitcoiner, what do you think would be an ideal setup or a better setup to start a family in a way that offers financial sustainability for women, but more importantly, sustainability for the couple to stay in love and evolve individually and together as a couple?
Okay, so I'll split that into two answers, because the financial part, you know, what I would say for me, if I could do it over again, and I was a Bitcoiner and I knew about Bitcoin. So if I was, you know, your age or, you know, in, you know, the same thing, I would say I would want to have something that I could stick with, whether it's this podcast, whether it's, you know, a little t-shirt shop or whatever I might want to be doing that's creative, you know, whether I'm doing some events once in a while, I would make sure that I had something that I was generating some form of revenue. Second thing financially, if I was in a position where my husband was like, no, I make all this money. Look, I have all this Bitcoin. I'd be like, good, give me some. I'm going to put my keys and it's mine. Like I would, I really would. I wouldn't allow myself to be rug pulled ever. And so if I'm giving up, you know, my ability to be an earner so that I can go do that peanut butter and jelly with no crust, I need some Bitcoin. And it's not about a transactional thing. It's really just about, I want to feel secure. You know, and so I would feel that that would be something that I would wish for, you know, an agreement for myself so that I just knew that I was going to be safe and okay. The second thing is with the keeping the love alive and keeping the relationship sustained. So I was just talking with Abu Bakar about this a couple hours ago, you know, knowing yourself in a relationship and do you want to be with a hunter or do you want to be with a gardener? You know, do you want to be with a farmer? And so I think, you know, the consciousness of a hunter is very important because you can just go get and you can have some quick meals. It's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it's crypto mindset or fiat mindset, but it's an important role, you know, to have a hunter in your sphere. But do you want to actually have something that's going to grow over time and have that long-term sustainability? So I think of like regenerative agriculture and regenerative ranching. You know, you're slowly building that soil up. You're cultivating it year after year. You can't just all of a sudden go, I'm a regenerative farmer and expect, and you did one season worth of work and then everything's going to grow for the next 50 years. It ain't happening. Like you have to constantly tend to the field. You constantly tend to your herd, your livestock. And so I would look at relationships that way very much, because I think it's proof of work. It's putting it in both ways and not taking each other for granted, and knowing that, like, as you evolve, you have to change a little bit. Like, oh, wow, now she's not getting any sleep because the kid's crying all the time. I have to step it up as a husband, as a father, and either relieve her personally or find some help to help her relieve her, you know, this, so that she can be rested and she can be present and she can be healthy, you know? And so I think it's a constant evolution. You know, there's not this, you know, check the box, I did that, and now we have a great relationship. You know, especially sexually, you know, and I think that's something that we all have to remember too. Cause as we get older, a lot of us think like, oh my God, I'm missing out. I have FOMO. What am I doing with this schlup over here? And look at him. He's picking his nose and drinking a beer, watching football, you know? and then meanwhile, you're reading 50 Shades of Grey, like, oh, Christian Grey. And you're like, honey, put the beer down. Let's go. And so you have to be like willing to dance with each other and meet each other when there's something that comes up. So it's like, there's no shame in asking for new things in your marriage and in your couplehood, you know, and, you know, you may not be able to receive them all of the time, but okay. Is there a third way? Is there a compromise? Is there an opportunity to find a different path that you both feel you get your needs met? But communication, of course, is key. But self-communication,
yeah,
is the first.
To dare to ask, that's so important. And exactly like you said, the self-communication aspect, because as women, we don't want trouble. Like, we don't want to trouble others, and then we want to take care of others, and we want to bring that nurturing, kind energy to everywhere we go. And yeah. I know a lot of people are like that, and I'm like that too. And oftentimes we don't ask. When we identify something, sometimes we don't dare to ask, or, oh, I can't be bothered, or I don't want to cause trouble to others, so I'm just going to keep it to myself and just deal with this, and then be accommodative and adaptive. And then it worked. Okay, nobody noticed, and I get by. Okay. And then the next time you get a little bit more uncomfortable, but you're like, I did this last time, I can do this again. And then you did it again. And then over time, what will happen is that you're going to forget about what you wanted. You're going to forget about that you had a need in the first place. And you're going to forget about how it's okay to want things.
It is beautiful to want things. Yeah. And it's great. And so when you go to a restaurant, you know, you don't just sit there and hope that they bring you some food. You know, you get to make a decision. You get to clearly communicate with the beautiful waitress and say, hey, I would like this great steak and some mashed potatoes or whatever, and I'm going to exchange some value for this, you know, and there's clear communication. Nobody feels bad when they go to a restaurant and have a desire to fill their hunger with some food and exchange it for some energy because they did some work ahead of time to get that energy, called money. And, you know, sometimes, like you said, as women, and I mean, some men are like this as well, but we fall back into this people pleaser, don't rock the boat thing, and just make sure that everybody's okay. And certainly depending on our upbringing, and if we had trauma, if we had to be caretakers to our family, you know, to keep things peaceful, whether we had, you know, just any kind of absence, disruption, violence, anything in our homes, you know, a lot of times we'll fall into the caregiver role as a child. And then when that moves forward into our lives. And so, and that limits our ability to feel safe asking for what we need, because we think everyone else's needs are up here and ours are down here, you know, and that can lead to danger zones, and been there, done that, and still have struggle with it sometimes. Cause it's like, we have these imprints, right? It's this code that lives within us. We have the opportunity to change the code if we're conscious of it, and it still will come up and get us, you know? So there's that practice. It's like, you have to be in the dojo every day, you know, whether we're meditating, whether we're doing affirmations, whether we're, you know, learning about different ways to communicate with ourselves and others. I think it's a never ending process. And I think that, you know, authenticity and honesty is so important to Bitcoiners, you know, so important. And it's it really brings this forward, I think, in us on our journeys as Bitcoiners, you know, because we are being presented with like, does this really work for me? Am I going to go do this? Or is this my truth? And, you know, like, so for me, this relationship that I'm, you know, getting out of right now, and if it gets reassembled, great. If it doesn't, great. It's just, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for my value system. It doesn't work for my dreams for the future. And as much as I am in love, it's like, there's so many more layers that I need to have met in order for me to feel whole, you know? And if I'm going to operate from this Bitcoin ethos, this Bitcoin standard of consciousness, I can't do it here and not do it here. You know, I have to be consistent everywhere. And so it's this whole network of humans and our consciousness in this world, it's just dragging me forward and pulling me forward into this best version of myself, even though I stumble constantly, you know, it's really cool. And I love being around people like you and all of us who are on this journey to like, question everything, you know, and you know, do I need to settle for this? Do we need to settle for this messed up fiat system that's poisoning the world? Do we need to settle for toxic chemicals? Do I need to settle? Like, we don't have to settle. That's the magic, you know, and that requires a lot of patience.
Right, right. And then from a relationship standpoint, I've heard this analogy about, kind of saying relationship is like a bank account, but for our common feeling, like Bitcoiners, I'm going to twist the analogy a little bit to say that a relationship between a couple is kind of like a piggy bank, and it's about equal give and take. And it's anytime you show kindness to your partner, you're putting a dime into the piggy bank, and every time you receive, or every time you say that, oh, I don't want to wash dishes, like you do it, and you took out a little dime, and you can, and for a good relationship, sometimes if you keep taking, you're not gonna notice that the amount is going down for a long time because you have that rich foundation. But if we all do math, we can all do math here. If you keep taking, then one day there's going to be nothing left. And the relationship is unlike piggy bank in the sense that with a piggy bank, if it's empty, you have nothing to spend, and that's fine. You can, whenever you choose, you can come back and save some more. But with relationships, sometimes if you run out of the dimes in the piggy bank, then it's broken. And there's no going back. And I guess if you see this, like, treat this as a reminder. And if you are in a relationship, like, go show kindness to your partner. And it doesn't have to be a grand gesture. Like, it can be remembering what they like and get their favorite snack and get some flower, like a bouquet, on your way back from the grocery store, from a farmer's market, and surprise her with something small and nice. And it's really just a gesture to show her or him that I care about you and I love you very much and you're on my mind. And when I'm experiencing something nice and positive, I think of you and I wish you could get to be here with me. And that's enough.
It is. And I can't, it's like, I literally had this conversation yesterday. Literally, what, not the piggy bank part, but just the taker and the giver, and like that feeling of knowing that you're being thought of, you know, and you know, our jobs in relationships, you know, in intimate relationships and partnerships, and we need to become experts on each other, you know. And if I don't know that you like cream in your coffee and sugar, and I just give you black coffee all the time, you're going to keep looking at me like, why are you not? Like, you know me, but you're just sort of ignoring this stuff and la, 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 you know? And, you know, do you know about the five love languages? Yeah. And so it's so important, because what we think like we're doing as this gesture is nice for the other person, it's maybe not their love language. And you're kind of like, you know, you might be missing the mark. And so instead of just going, well, that's what I like and that's what I want to receive, so I'm going to give it to you, it go a step further. You know, dig deeper, go stretch yourself a little bit. And it's not that difficult, you know? So it's like, if your person's love language is words, write them a little note, you know, or if your person's love language is acts of service, do those dishes, you know, when they're unexpected, or any of it, you know? And so it's about thou, it's the other, you know, it's us and thou and we. And so it's really, really, I love that you brought this up, you know, and, you know, there's sometimes we do need to be bigger takers than other times, but we can't always be the taker. We certainly can't always be the people pleasing giver, you know? And so sometimes I think we find ourselves trying to heal these old wounds with our family and our parents, you know? And so it's like God puts us together with someone who's going to test us and say, okay, here's the taker, here's the giver. How are you going to find this balance? And it's just kind of like, if you can't find the balance, you're going to repeat those old cycles until you get that lesson, until that curriculum, you know, gets accomplished in your spiritual path with each other. So,
and I wish people take the five love languages more seriously, because if you think about it, it's such a shortcut. And if you know what your partner cares about and you just do that, you're going to get so much, like so many more great results than if you were just adapt whatever you like onto them. And that's going to be a really, really tricky situation, in the sense that if your priorities in love languages don't match, and then you assume and then you act, you're going to feel like you're giving so much, because you're giving up things that you think they will care about because you care about it. But in reality, that's not oftentimes the case. And you don't want to give your partners things that they don't value as much. And you want to put the least amount of effort, so that, and then they receive the great, like there's an ROI as well, because as we want to give, and there's an expectation management aspect too, because when we give, we're giving, and we don't want to burn out in relationships too. And there's a way to be strategic and smart about it while being sincere and authentic. And that definitely requires communications and understanding of each other. And like you said, be each other's expert, right?
It's so true. I love that you brought up ROI. Like I have a talk that is called the ROI of love. And it's important, you know, to think of it that way. And it's not that it's just, oh, this transaction, tit for tat, debits and credits and all this kind of stuff. It really is that consideration of other, you know, and then you not being frustrated and understanding, like, why isn't this person, you know, getting it? And so it's really that, again, that truth telling, feeling safe to tell the truth to each other about what you want, what you need. I'm taking a course on Mind Valley right now. And it's called Calling in the One.
Wow. And it looks like awesome. It feels like I need to take that course.
Dude, everybody needs to take this course who wants to have an intimate relationship with a human being, including themselves. She talks about, who are you when you're in, you know, a healthy love relationship? Like, you know, not just like, what's the list of the other person look like? You know, like, oh, he's this and he's that and he's da 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 da. No, it's who are you? And not just who are you so that you can magnetize this person toward you, but what does it feel like when you're receiving healthy love? What does it feel like when you're giving healthy love? How do you show up in work? How do you show up in your friendships? How do you show up as a creative? You know, how do you show up as a lover? And so stepping into that vision, if you've gotten to experience, that's great. If you haven't felt that, then it's like, what would you like to feel? What do you imagine it would feel like to be cared for by your beloved? You know, what do you imagine it's going to feel like waking up with them? What do you imagine it's going to feel like when you fall down and hurt your knee? You know, all the things, it's like, what's it going to feel like to feel that sacred love? You know, and who are you? How do you show up? And I love doing this exercise this morning, because it was just like, I know that when I'm in healthy love, I am such a great version of myself. I'm more shiny. I'm more me because I feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel cared for and I feel appreciated and seen.
Right, exactly.
You know? And we all need that.
Exactly.
You know, we all need it. It's not lip service. Men need it, women need it. There's no you know, we need to feel that as human beings. And so
I'm really glad you're on board with the whole ROI thing, because it may sound like calculative and manipulative on the first, but it's not about that. It's about, how do we love sustainably? How do we love sustainably? And in a way, like, if we take time to understand our partner's love language and actually do that, not only you achieve the biggest results more sustainably with the least amount of effort, which is which is going to make it easier to give. It's going to be easier to give. And then your partner are going to appreciate you actually taking the time to understand them as a person for the reason you just said. Like, we as humans, we just want to be seen. We just want to be seen and we just want to be loved. There's no exception, really.
There's not. Yeah. There are no exceptions. And we want to feel like we belong, you know, the sense of belonging. And so belonging in the intimate unit and belonging in the universe, belonging on earth with our community, it's a universal need for all of us. And I think when we can acknowledge that without shame, you know, and not feel like, oh, I don't need to ask for what I want. And I'm just going to, you know, just, yeah, I'll take what you got. Like, that's diminishing what our truth is. That's diminishing what God wants us to feel. Like, you know, I think about, I talk about comparisonitis a lot. You know, like, you know, we compare ourselves to others and we compare, you know, oh, she's got this, he's got that. Oh, that's over there. Da, 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 da. That's a natural thing that we all do. Everybody does. That frequency, that vibration of comparing is very low. It's a low frequency. It's not something that's expansive and filled with possibility. It's filled with doubt. And I look at nature, for example, and I always think about a flower garden. You know, and I think about, you know, a rose bush and a sunflower. Like, the rose bush is never looking over at the sunflower going, oh, I'm not tall enough. I don't have those yellow little things. Oh, what a loser. I'm the worst rose bush ever. The rose bush is just being like, fuck yeah, I'm a rose. Let's go. I got some cool thorns. I'm pink. Ha ha. Cool. High five. Pink. You're yellow sunflower. Like, there's no comparison with nature. Nature is just is. And so I think of like the Taoist philosophy of just being with what is and acknowledging what is.
So non-act, for those non-action.
Yeah. And just being, you know, and that's what I think for all of us, like, to strive toward without, you know, attachment, but just being like, this is what it is. I'm Val. I'm sparkly. I'm a little bit weird. I like that. You know, I don't have to go try to be somebody I'm not, you know? And so I think that leads to this authenticity, you know, and that leads to feeling more like, yeah, I need more sun up here because I'm a sunflower, you know, versus I'm a little ground cover. I need some shade. It's okay to need what you need as a natural, you know, child of God or extension of God, whatever you want to say, you know, however you view this. So speaking up and making sure we know what we need and want is reverence toward God to me.
And just listening to you say this made me realize that maybe self-acceptance is the beginning point, starting point of authenticity. We need to accept ourselves as is. And of course, there's always room to be better. And then we want to be better. But first things first, we need to accept ourselves as is, show some compassion to ourselves when nobody's there or when everybody's there. And talking about mental framework, I personally have so much respect and appreciation for people who are resilient, the type who, when life gives them the lemon and then they make lemonade out of, and you're definitely one of those people. What are some of the mental frameworks you adapted along the way that helped you dig yourself out of the hole and continue to serve you each day?
Great question. It's ever evolving, and it's me really recognizing that God is in the middle of my life. You know, and this whole framework, this 11X framework that I came up with, I recognized, you know, in life coaching, there's the wheel of life and there's eight areas and they're all just like a pizza and they touch each other. There's nothing in the middle. And I was just like, that's not how I think life is. To me, love is God and God needs to be in the middle. And I started looking at all these other areas of my life and I started wondering, like, how does all of these things relate to my life? How does my body, mind, and soul relate to God? How does my family, intimate, and friends relate to God? How does my time, money, and resources relate to God? How does my mission relate to God? Those are the 11 areas. And so if you put God in the middle, and if every decision that you make and is directed towards God, is directed toward love, then it's going to be an appropriate decision, you know? And if you're over here making decisions in this area and you're thinking about this stuff and you're not taking God into account, that's the first, you know, I think that's where we start getting out of whack. And that's how I noticed I got out of whack, because I was trying to please and think I'm being this dutiful wife and dutiful mom, et cetera. And so instead of, you know, really focusing on that previously, I realized, wow, I'm going to do an experiment. You know, I'm going to keep practicing and wondering, like, is it appropriate for me to have more wine? You know, I used to love red wine, right? And I mean, way too much, like sailors on shore leave, right? And because I was coping, I was trying to have relief from pain and suffering that I was experiencing. And so I just kept asking, like, yeah. And so there's that childish mind, that teenager mind. Don't tell me what to do. I can go have the wine, or don't tell me I can go have sex with this guy, da, 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 whatever. Like, nah, you know? And so I had to mature emotionally and spiritually out of that teenage wounded mindset, because I didn't want to be told what to do, you know? And so it's like, once I started, you know, refocusing and reorienting toward God in the middle of my life, it wasn't like God's going to punish me and strike me down if I don't do this. It's just like, is this really serving the highest and best good for myself and my loved ones in earth?
How was God introduced into your life in the first place?
When I was a teenager, I really wanted to understand God. You know, my family was not religious at all. We didn't go to church. And so I started taking myself to church, you know, and when I was maybe like 13, it didn't make sense to me. Like, if God's supposed to be this, like, you know, this version of God is supposed to be this almighty father loving figure, but then you're supposed to be afraid of God and fear God. That makes no sense. Cause I think of, like, they say that it's, you know, God is like your parent, your father. And I don't want to be afraid of my father. I want to respect and love my father. And so the fear part kept messing me up, and the, like, you're going to go to hell and burn and all that just kept messing me up. And then, you know, but I kept wanting, I wanted to feel this sense of infinity, you know? And so I was always curious. And then I just kept getting to understand what was going on in the world with, like, starving children and all these horrible things happening. And I was just like, God wouldn't do that to a child. Why would God let a child starve? Why would God, you know? And so I was just really confused about the whole thing. And so then I was like, I'm just going to study science instead and physics, and this will make more sense if I get more logical. And so I went from, you know, that curiosity to the physics stuff and math and just stuff that was a little bit more concrete and conceptually. And then when I was 19 years old, I was still seeking, because I was, you know, just struggling. I was alone and I was in college, and I went to the library and I saw this purple book. I think, yeah, it's up there. Be Here. Where is it? Right there. This book by Ram Dass is Remember, Be Here Now. And I like purple. So I was like, cool, it's in the self-help thing, you know? And so I just started learning about it. And I had taken acid at that point. And I was like, whoa, this guy's a doctor, a PhD, and now he's taking acid and meditating with some yogis. All right, what the heck is this? And I lived in Detroit at the time. You know, I wasn't exposed to yoga and all the hippity-dippity-doo-dah stuff. And I'm just like, whoa. So it just, Ram Dass really opened my eyes to, in my heart and my soul, to a version of God, spirit, universe that felt more loving and compassionate to me. The stories around it felt more loving and compassionate. And so that started my journey, you know? So that was 35 years ago.
I'm new, very new to this. I think I'm starting to develop a relationship with God in this past year, actually. Growing up, I knew, like, in my teenage years, I always thought I'm going to be a Buddhist in my 40s for whatever reason. And I thought, okay, I'm going to, like, be probably a Buddhist in my 40s. Like, right now it's too soon. I'm not going to go there. And I got introduced to this idea of having a peer-to-peer relationship with God by another Bitcoiner. And I couldn't shook off that idea. So that was, like, all I could think about after I heard that term. I didn't quite know what it meant when I first heard it. And I'm starting to develop that relationship. And more so on my show, like, God has come up more recently, not from me. Sometimes I ask deliberate questions if I know they are into it. But it comes up, like, naturally more and more, even, like, especially with Bitcoiners. And it seems like especially Bitcoiners, we have this craving of developing a relationship with God.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you're experiencing this through your own experience and not just believing a story because someone told you had
right.
to.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're magnetized towards this energy and you're magnetized towards the experiential feeling of the energy. And so I think that's very important. I think for me too, you know, I never understood like, well, why do I have to go to that middleman, you know, to go talk to God? Cause I remember even as a little girl, I say little, it was about the time when I was taking myself to church, I would go, I don't know why I would go to the side of my house, but I remember going to the side of my house and I would pray a lot. And I used to pray for boobs.
Was your wish granted?
Well, I didn't pray for long boobs, but I prayed for boobs.
Something. Be careful what you wish for.
post baby stuff, but no, but it's funny. But I just remember like having that experience because I wanted to know like how do I pray and how do I make that union, you know? And then I got pulled out of that because of all the storytelling of the churches, you know, and so. It took me out of that one-on-one relationship that I was experiencing because I thought, well, I'm supposed to believe this way because that's what they told me. And so I bypassed and abandoned my experience. And as I got older, I realized, no, that's actually the truth and whatever that looks like for me personally versus, you know, what it looks like for you. And so, and I remember when I, you know, went to my first Greek Easter in Washington, D.C. with my ex-husband and his big, awesome Greek family, right? And so there's this monster, you know, Greek cathedral, temple, whatever you call it, in the church, I don't know. And it was beautiful and just like this huge ceremony, you know, couple thousand people, I don't know, it was monster. And you're carrying candles and singing and all this. I'm like, this is awesome. And I'm like, I love ceremony. I love all the outfits and all the stuff. It was great. But there were no women up there. It was all men carrying the special incense-y stuff and talking and doing all the robes. And I'm like, and so later, you know, we got home and we're having the big Greek lamb dinner thing at midnight or whatever. I don't know. It was just all this crazy stuff. And I'm just like, why aren't there any women participating in the service, you know? And they're just like, women are dirty.
Mm-hmm. That's what they said. Wow.
That's what he said. That was my brother-in-law said this to me. And I said, excuse me? And he's like, yeah, the church thinks women are dirty because they bleed every month.
Right.
I'm like, you mean the women that gave birth to you? Those women are dirty and they can't serve God and participate in the beautiful ceremony? And so it was just this blah of what do you, blah, right. You know, and it just made no sense to me. And I'm just like, we have just as much opportunity and right to communicate with God and share the good news as men, you know, and obviously there's certain, you know, cultures and religions and churches, whatever, that women get to participate and do that, you know, but that was just such a giant turnoff again, you know, of like, I don't need the middleman, you know, there's that causes, you know, the phone game, you get miscommunication, you know, and I'm just like, I want to talk with God on with my own language.
I was just at BTC Prague and at the women's brunch, someone said, we create Bitcoiners.
Like, yeah,
it's so true, right?
We're printing out some Bitcoiners.
Yeah, like Bitcoiners.
It's true. And it's so, it's just this, I don't know. I think when the ego gets involved in anything, and we all have the ego issues, like men and women, there's no, you know, but it really messes everything up. And I think that's unfortunately what has gone on in these traditions and these religions and whatnot. And you just get stuck on these stories and you get stuck on these paradigms. And then there's no room for actually the experiential feeling of what God is. And so I appreciate indigenous communities and they use plant medicine and they do nature ceremonies. And it's just like, yeah, it's you and your experience, you know? And so I think, bless you. I'm a fan. And you know, and my son, God bless him, he's super into Christianity. You know, he's 16. He's reads the Bible every day, and we've been praying together a lot lately, and I'm starting to read the Bible with him because I want to know what he's reading, you know, and I want to get on his page so we can have a conversation and connect with God. And I don't care if he's Buddhist or Christian or whatever. I'm like, you're interested in God? Let's have like meeting, let's connect, you know. But like, I, based on my experience, I know, like, I'm still, yeah, I'm more into the peer-to-peer jam.
Nice. As a Bitcoiner, hey? What would you say was the hardest part of all of this time when you were trying to bounce back? Was there a hardest part you were really struggling with? Or looking back, what was the biggest challenge you had to overcome to get to the end of the tunnel?
The shame. Yeah, the shame. It was really, so I did, you know, a 12-step AA program. And the thing that I didn't like was you start, the first thing you say is, I'm Valerie and I'm an alcoholic. And I was just like, I don't identify as an alcoholic. I identify as a woman who was wounded, who used alcohol way too much to try to relieve herself from lots and lots of pain. And I didn't understand other coping mechanisms, and it got way out of hand. So the minute you identify as X, Y, or Z, to me, your subconscious says, yep, that's you. And so the minute we identify as a Bitcoiner, we're like, yay, I feel associated with these values. I feel associated with these missions. And so there's this association that happens when you claim an identity. And, so I started, of course, going to the Tony Robbins things and walking on fire coals and all that stuff. And one thing that really stuck out to me, because I was doing his stuff and 12 steps, and I was just throwing the book at everything, because I was like, I do not want that to ever happen again. Like, what can I do to make sure I don't, you know, have another giant crash in my life and snap? And Tony was talking about, you know, the greatest human need is for consistency with our identity. And so when we start claiming that we are this powerful person, but we're acting out of accordance, you know, and we have this cognitive dissonance and we're being this less version of ourselves, we're going to have this like stressful feeling. We're going to have discomfort. And so same thing, if you're identifying as I'm a victim, or I got abused, or I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a loser, or I'm a la la la, our subconscious is getting programmed with that. And I couldn't say it. Like I would just, you know, I surrendered to it for just a little bit. And then it was just like, nope, I'm Valerie. And I would just go around, and then I would get stink eye from people. And they would look at you like, no, you're breaking the rules. You're supposed to just claim that you're this, you know, broken soul. And the only way to get saved is through this program and God and all that. And I'm like, yeah, the program's going to help. God's definitely helping. But it's very, very, like, if I were to go have a regular job and I had to tell my boss, like, oh, I'm going to my 12-step meeting because I'm an alcoholic, that's going to feel like shit. Most people are not wearing a t-shirt that says I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a drug addict, or I'm a sex addict, or whatever it is, you know? There's shame with those labels. And so for me, when I got the opportunity to recognize that that was false, and I don't have to subscribe to that, that's when I started thinking about this new model, you know, and I started really, really understanding the importance of how we talk to ourselves and what the identity is that we choose to say, yes, that's me. You know, we're all of these things, right? The mom, the Bitcoiner, the lover, the this, that. But when when you're identifying and repetitively identifying as something that you associate with shame and less than, you're going to stay there. You're never going to rise up. And so I was like, how do people ever graduate? And they're like, they don't. You have a disease. You're broken. You're not fixable. And I'm like, I don't believe that either. Like, I believe like in the butterfly theory. Like, you could be a caterpillar for a while, and yes, you got to get gooey and disassemble from this old thing into truly a goo state before you can come out with this beautiful, gorgeous wings. I wrote an article called The Bitcoiner's Dilemma, and it talks about this whole process. And so it's very, very, it's very important that when we are going through personal transformation of any kind, you know, how are we identifying ourselves, you know, and what are we willing to say goodbye to with an old identity so that we can become this new version of ourselves and we can emerge from the goo. And so it's scary because we don't know what's going to happen on the other side of the goo, but the caterpillar somehow knows. Like, it just is natural. It's nature. It doesn't resist, you know, but our human ego wants to resist the change. You know, it wants to keep things the same because it's predictable and it knows how to operate, you know? And so the ego is going to try to keep you in that old identity.
Or you know what? The caterpillar doesn't actually know if he can make it, but he does it anyways.
But he does it anyways. Exactly. And in the article, you know, I was doing a little bit of research on butterflies, you know, and the, one of the butterfly experts was just like, you know, no matter how hard you see the butterfly struggling to get out of the cocoon or the, you know, the chrysalis, don't help it. It has to have its own struggle, you know, because if you try to open it up and give it this, oh, I'll help the butterfly, you're not giving the butterfly the opportunity to develop the strength in its wings so that it can fly, you know, and that was a big one too. So it's about really taking ownership of your catharsis, you know, and as much as yes, you want your team, your crew, your tools, everything around you, you're the one who has to go through that process. And you're the one who has to break free from the old.
And when it comes to addiction, I like how Jordan Peterson puts it. And he was talking about addiction in a sense that when we approach addiction and look at people who have addictions or people who have addictions looking at themselves and they feel the shame because they think addiction is a bad thing. It means they have the disease and then they are addicted to this. Yeah. But the reality is if we think about why they adapted that addiction in the first place, there was a reason. Either they were trying to run away from something or they're trying to, because as human, like we naturally seek comfort. And if our natural state, for whatever reason, is uncomfortable, it's natural to want to run away from that. It's natural to want comfort. And if those things, either it's sex or drug or alcohol, if those things bring us comfort, even for a short amount of time, and if you're a high time preference, then you gravitate towards that. And when we're trying to treat addiction or dial back, we oftentimes overlook what is the thing that caused the addiction in the first place. And that is the thing we need to fix, not the addiction itself. The addiction is just what's manifesting through what we're lacking, through what we're trying to run away from. And it's the same thing for Bitcoin. But on the flip side is that Bitcoin is not, it's a means to an end. And what it's just what we are trying to manifest through. But the thing we're trying to manifest really is freedom, is love, is connection, is being human and achieving our potential and living our lives to the maximalist style of whatever passion we choose to adapt. And Bitcoin is the way we manifest these things, and is not the thing that we're manifesting. Just like addiction is not the disease itself, the truth lies in something that's deeper than that, and oftentimes people don't realize that.
They don't. And Gabor Mate talks about that as well. And it's like, not ask not why the addiction, but why the pain. And so these are coping mechanisms. And so in this book that I'm working on, Snap Goes the Mommy, it's, you know, it has the 11X model in it. You know, I talk about the 5 D's, you know, diamonds, drugs, digital, dicks, and donuts. And so, and I think about the external things that we use to try to fill up this pain, and truly what I believe in, you know, having God in the middle, is we're trying to fill our soul hole, you know, and we're trying to fill this gap, this pain, this feeling of disconnection from God, this feeling of disconnection from other, this feeling of disconnection from self, and that discomfort. And so we don't know how to sit with that in a healthy way sometimes, especially now in this day and age, is a whole another ball game, because, you know, we have instant chemicals reactions that are happening. Oh, pick up my phone. Oh, look, dopamine, 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 everything. And so our brains are getting hijacked and our whole nervous systems are getting hijacked with this chemical cocktail. And so younger people, particularly, I think when you start thinking about how our brains are developing, and, you know, me, the old days, I'm like, yay, what was my toy? I had sand and dirt and some rocks and some sticks. And my mom would say, go out until it's dark and then you can come and eat, and like, don't come home until it's dark. And so that's what you did in your neighborhood. You didn't sit there and have instant things. So brain, developmentally, our brains, you know, are so different than your generation and even younger in my children's generation. And so the ability to self-soothe is very, very different now than it was. And not to say that, you know, we didn't have issues with drugs and alcohol and addiction and all the same 5Ds, but I'm very concerned about, you know, what's going to happen with this D, the digital D, for all of us, you know, and how it's hijacking our ability to, you know, stay in a place of presence, stay in a place of self-soothing, stay in a place of power, you know? And so I am very concerned about the future if people do not take time to sit with discomfort, you know, and just recently, you know, in the last 3 months, I've been going through hell in this relationship and this, you know, dissolution and do I stay, do I go, blah, blah, blah. And my whole body has just felt like it's got like, you know, lightning bolts going through it all the time, just anxiety, panic, the whole thing. And I'm just like, oh my God, you know, and just to the max, you know, and so I'm learning different techniques to just sit with it, you know, and sit with that sensation and just observe and be. And because my instant reaction is to run away from it, get away from that sensation. That sensation can kill you. It's bad, da, 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 whatever this brain, you know, this part of the brain's saying actually. And so, so for all of us, the self-responsibility to understand what works for us with our self-soothing so that those, we don't keep getting hijacked by that fear is, I think it's so important. And I love seeing what Bitcoiners are doing. And obviously everybody else who's even not Bitcoiners who are trying to help people self-regulate, you know, and learning these skills. And what works for you may not work for me. Anything you take away from this, I'd say the number one thing I would hope, my prayer for you would be learn to sit with that discomfort. Just moment by moment by moment, and learn what self-soothing looks like for you. Because if you can't do that, you can't give yourself the gift of inner peace. And then you're not going to be able to operate effectively on your mission. And I, again, I'm not perfect at it. I just went through a big, you know, tidal wave of stuff. And I was like, whoa, gotta sharpen the saw here, because I wasn't as, you know, prepared for what just happened, you know? And so I felt like, okay, I gotta get focused on that again, so I don't fall down what happened 8 years ago, you know?
I'll add on to that. We have to believe that we have a happy ending. We have to believe that, because what I've,
yes, believe,
what I've identified is that the power of karma is bigger than the power of hard work, unfortunately, sometimes. However, the power of will is larger than karma. If you are so strong in your faith and just in your sheer belief that I have a good ending, I have a happy ending, and things will get a lot worse before it gets better, but it will get better for the better. It will get better, and then I'll be so good, be so evolved from my old self that I will be proud of myself when I'm finally out of it, even if that means it will be a lot worse before it gets better. You just have to have this, you just have to hold on to this phase. And the darker place you are right now, the tighter you need to hold on to this, because there's no other way. There's no other way. You just have to believe it with your sheer will and act like you have a happy ending. Act like a protagonist, and always choose to be a protagonist. And it's, believe it or not, this is your choice, and you can actually choose to be your own protagonist in your own life. And you don't have to be that secondary person if you don't want to. Never choose to be a victim, because this life is not about that. You're wasting your time, wasting your life if you think that. Yeah,
totally. And belief is so, like you said, it's so powerful. That was the name of my first CD that I made when I was DJing, you know, 20 some years ago. And I was like, give it out to, I glued fur on the back of the cover, and I was like, believe. And it was like, I believe I'm going to be a successful DJ and travel and do all these things. And so I just knew, like, if I can do that one thing, it's going to be okay. And if I can keep that connection with God, you know, God wants you to shine. God shines when you shine. God smiles when you smile. So when we remember that, and just like our parents, when we smile, our parents are happy for us. They're not saying, you shouldn't be so happy. Like, they're stoked, you know? So I'm always joyful when I see my children happy. And so if we think of that relationship and that it is our birthright to be joyful, it's our birthright to be successful, it's our birthright to feel fulfilled, you know? And so, you know, it's okay to believe that and desire that and plan and take action and put in that proof of work, you know, and it has to be combined. I was reading a thing about Michael Phelps, you know, the Olympic swimmer, and talking about like the three steps that, you know, really helped him succeed and become who he is. And the first one is mental vision. The first one is having a vision, you know, just really clear, like, what's the vision? I'm going to be an Olympic medalist, or I'm going to clear this, you know, this race. But then the second was mental rehearsal. And the intensity of his mental rehearsal, they said he did mental rehearsal 2 hours a day, hours a day. And he would break it up into these chunks, and he would do these like 30-second chunks, and he would do them, you know, dozens and dozens of times throughout the day. And he would have this chunk, and he would visualize himself, and not only visualize himself doing the successful thing, but he would visualize himself with all the obstacles that could get in his way. So if he's swimming and somebody kicked his goggle off, he would visualize, what's it going to feel? What am I going to do? I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going like it, you know, or what happens if your short gets pulled, or any of it, you get stuck in the little lane thing. And so visualizing not just the cool finish line, but visualizing, how am I going to be like this Jedi along the path, you know? And then, so vision, and then mental rehearsal, but then daily practice, like doing the thing, not just visualizing it. And so your subconscious doesn't know the difference between you visualizing and mental rehearsal versus doing it. So he's so primed and prepped when he's in those lanes, you know? And for 6 years, this guy went to the pool every day, Christmas, holidays, he's sick. And his coach was just like, I know, because I was there with him. So it's not like, oh, today's the day where I'm going to give up. It's like, no, every fucking day that guy was in the lanes doing his work. That's how we have to tackle our personal growth. That's how we have to tackle being a Bitcoiner. That's how we have to tackle our spiritual growth, you know, and our manifesting and creation of life. And so it was such a great, great thing to see. And I was like, wow, Val, what are you doing? Are you doing that much? And I noticed, I'm like, no, you suck. And it's like, no, that's not part of the vision and the mental rehearsal. So it's just so cool to learn from all these people and their techniques.
We're getting into the witchcraft territory. Like the Valerie and the Vivian were going to be the witch sisters in Bitcoin and teaching you how to like do
the two V's, dude.
I love it.
We can do some episodes on manifesting and episodes
on
visioning.
Let's do a workshop,
and just have
like teach people how to manifest for things.
Yeah. Totally. I would love it. We can do a V for V yes. with V and V. We'll do value for value with V and V and manifesting
imagine all this good karma we're going to spread into the world, helping people achieve their dreams by teaching them, like we're inspiring them how to get closer through manifestation, right? Like that's going to be a good mission.
What we're working on with Bitcoin for Peace and the Bitcoiner Hub, which you're a part of, and thank you, I'm so grateful, is, you know, putting together these value for value courses, putting together value for value workshops. Obviously the summit was a beautiful value for value experience. And so for us as Bitcoiners, let's practice, let's put this into play. How can we serve people? But then how do we create these templates and models that we can get out to the multi-billion dollar online education and coaching world? You know, how can we help other people put Bitcoin into their revenue stream? You know, still have your same stuff, but like, let's do some add some value for value. So I think this could be a really fun thing.
I came close to your work through Bitcoin for Peace. And only when I was researching for this episode, I realized you're a longtime podcaster and your past episodes were more about inner peace, creativity, and better living our lives, which is absolutely my gem. And I found this video that you made 4 years ago arguing why the pursuit of balance is bullshit. And you talk about this idea of rather than seeking balance, seek harmony. So first, do you still feel the same? And what is the difference between the two, balance and harmony? And how do you balance? How do you actually approach seeking harmony on a daily basis?
I still believe balance is bullshit. I think it's unattainable, and I think it's a static image. It's flat, and it means you're dead. And to me, balance is something that is just, it's not the way that energy flows. There's flow with harmony. You know, there's something has to go up, something comes down, they complement each other, et cetera, et cetera. Balance is just this flat, static thing in my mind. And when I think I'm achieving balance, right, you're like trying to balance the spinning plates all over the, you know, and but it's like there's movement still. There's still movement. You're not static. And so it's an unachievable word in my idea, in my view of things. And so I remember reading Shonda Rhimes, who did Grey's Anatomy. She wrote a book called The Year of Yes when I was in rehab. And it was such a great book. And I'd never even seen Grey's Anatomy at this point. But she was an introvert. She's obviously running. She's an executive. She's running this show. She's running her studio. She's a single mom. And she was just like, I can never win. Because either I'm at my kid's soccer game and I'm missing the wrap party for the season, or I'm at the award show and I'm missing my kid's first steps or whatever. And she's just constantly like, I'm always having this trade-off life, you know? And she's like, but I want to feel like, you know, I'm not lopsided, you know? And to me, like, this is where kind of that, the 11X love code comes in. Cause it's like, in life, when you're analyzing things, a lot of times we're crushing it over in relationships, crushing it in money, but we have diabetes because we don't go to the gym, you know, or vice versa. You're not making any money, but you're so good with your family and, you know, you're in great shape, but, you know, the bill collector's at your door. And so to me, the concept of harmony is you're not always going to be in those positions if you pay attention, you know, so there's going to be this opportunity for us to shine the light on each of these areas of our life, analyze them just like you would in a business. And, you know, where are we at currently? What's the status? Where do I wish to be? You know, and how can I, you know, right now I need to focus on my kids because they're struggling and they need mommy. So yeah, I might be missing some gym workouts or whatever. And I might not be, you know, getting some gigs because I need to take time here. I don't want to operate in that position too long, you know, because then it's going to keep going lopsided. And so it's like, how do we keep dancing through all of these 11 areas of life in a way still with God in the middle? And so I really thought like, yeah, harmony to me is more, it's more achievable mentally, you know, because I think if you think like I'm supposed to have all of these areas optimized all at the same time, you're going to let yourself down, you're going to beat yourself up, and it's an impossible task. So that's kind of where I look at harmony as something that's fluid and flexible.
Right. It's rather dynamic. And you talk about trade-offs. And what is your approach to trade-off? Because trade-off is everywhere and everything is literally a trade-off. So what is your mental framework on making the decision of, is the juice worth the squeeze, let's say?
Is the juice worth the squeeze? Yeah. It depends. You know, again, it's looking at your current situation of life, right? And looking at your current relationships, looking at your current health, looking at your current money, your resources. I kind of broke down the model into God's in the middle. You've got a kind of a three macros of self, relationships, and resources are the macros of those nine, and then your mission, right? And so it is this something that's time constrained, right? Do you need to make a decision right now on this? And is it something that is probably never going to give you know, an opportunity in the future? Like, is this a one-time shot? Do you need to take it now? You know, and I think about a lot of times with opportunities, just like, you know, a river, you know, and if you see something coming down this river and it's like, whoa, that's a golden opportunity. Are you willing to like let go of the security of the shore and jump in and grab it and bring it back? Or do you think you're going to get 10 more of those opportunities?
This has been a blast, Valerie. And whenever I talk to you, there's so much energy that I can feel, not only in person, but even through a screen. I can totally feel your energy and your positivity and just really a ray of sunshine and a ray of love. And I really appreciate your presence and your work in the space that all of the Bitcoiners do benefit from. And how do we stay close to your work?
You can find me at djvaleriebelove.com, and all of the socials are djvaleriebelove. And then BitcoinForPeace.org is our site. And then we will be putting up Bitcoiner Hub soon, which is going to be just like an umbrella for education, podcasters, events and stuff. And, you know, there's obviously lots of those opportunities out there for people. Just from a design perspective, I really love the idea of having, you know, something that's a little more feminine and colorful and playful that sort of fits our aesthetics. But, you know, we are going to be working. I don't think we mentioned this, so, and maybe I would love to have you share a story, Viv, but we're going to be working on a Bitcoin for Peace story series, sort of like Chicken Soup for the Soul. But we want to have, you know, everybody comes to Bitcoin, like we said, from their own angle and their own reasons, you know? And so the more that we have an opportunity to share stories that are relatable to certain audiences, then it's like, ooh, wow, that sounds like me. And maybe I didn't realize Bitcoin could be something powerful for me in a domestic violence situation or in a refugee situation or in a, you know, empowerment for my kids situation, whatever it might be. So we're going to be, you know, it's just going to be a big long-term project that we're working on, and I want to make it value for value so that people who are contributors will receive in perpetuity, you know, splits. So I think that's going to be kind of a fun thing to see how that goes. So that's also on BitcoinForPeace.org.
Any final thoughts you want to share with the Life with Bitcoin audience?
Oh man, Life with Bitcoin. You guys are so lucky. You've got Viv. She's the best. And I'm so grateful that I have a Viv as my soul sister. And yeah, I would just say for all of us, like, we're obviously in this very tumultuous time in the world, you know, everywhere we go, everywhere we turn, there's this, you know, there's nonsense, there's lies, there's deceit, there's pain, there's suffering. And it's easy to get sucked in and Velcroed into all of that nonsense, you know, and I honestly think it's by design. And for those of us, you know, who are on a mission and who are blessed to have the opportunity to kind of look from above, like, stay up there, stay in that higher zone, you know, and help each other out. Because again, like, you may look like you've got it all together on the outside, but some of us, you might not. And so just stay close to the ones you love, you know, and stay focused on love and stay focused on the mission and belief. Just as Viv said.
Yes. And before we wrap up the show, I'll just add one more point to that, is that remember that you don't have to choose to suffer. It's a choice. It's a choice. Yeah. It really is. So remember that you don't have to choose to suffer. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of Live with Bitcoin. And I'm telling you, Live with Bitcoin is better. And if you live a Live with Bitcoin, you're going to know exactly what I mean. And thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Valerie, for your time and your beautiful energy. And we'll see you in the next episode.
Woohoo! Aloha, everybody. Thanks, Vivian.